Well, you know what time it is. 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the place to be is right here with JT and the No Chaser. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220. Right now I'm running solo, but it is what it is. All right, people. Let's start this way, you know. I'm from the New York, New Jersey area. I live in Jersey. I happen to be a Met fan, but there's been nothing but drama. Nothing but drama going on with the NY, meaning the New York Yankees. Alex Rodriguez, nicknamed A-Rod, supposedly going to get suspended or is facing a big-time suspension from Major League Baseball, is trying to work his way back from hip surgery, saying that he's healthy, he's ready to play. And the Yankees said, no, you're not. You have a quad injury. The doctor, we had you take an MRI, and the doctor says you have a grade 1 quad injury. So you need to do some more rehab and be patient, because we want you to be right, in quotation marks, before you come back. Now, Alex saying, no. And he went to his own doctor. Now, he went to a doctor, and the doctor didn't examine him physically, but just looked at his MRI and said, I don't see an injury. I don't see where you have what they say you have, a grade 1 quad strain. Don't look like it to me. I hate to say it like that, but it says it doesn't look like it to me. So Alex says, you know, I'm ready to play. There's nothing wrong with me. And like I told you before, Cashman and company management of the Yankees said you have an injury. So you need to be on the DL a little longer. We want you to go down to Tampa to rehab, and then we're probably going to send you out for one or two rehab games. Now, you know they know that he's facing a possible suspension, but you know he said already that, hey, I'm going to appeal this. And if he does appeal it, just like a lot of other players are going to, should and probably will appeal it, they're going to be able to play out the string this year. Now, depending on when the appeal is heard, which is probably sometime after the season is over, he may have, now they're saying a lifetime ban. I kind of doubt that. Come on, I kind of doubt that. He's never been tested positive. He's only been saying he took it one time. So he's never been tested positive. Hold on a minute. Let me see what we got here. This Mac?
Yes, it is, sir. Sorry about that. A little late coming in.
Okay.
So I just wanted to call you guys and call in and talk to my audience. I'm sorry. I was a little late. I was stuck in traffic, so I was trying to get home. Sorry about that.
Okay.
We called you from the cell phone, but it was acting kind of goofy. So I was like, I'm trying to do all that. So thank everybody for tuning in. Sorry about being late. Sorry, Jerry, about that, but I knew you could handle it if I was a few minutes late. You could have handled it if I was a whole lot late and missed the whole damn show. just wanted to call in and catch all my people in the audience and just talk to everybody. So, anyway, I know you're probably talking about Brian Braun.
No.
Is that who you're talking about, Brian Braun?
I was talking about A-Rod, Alex Rodriguez. And the drama that's going on with him. I don't know if you caught up with that or know what's going on with him.
I was
just saying that the Yankees saying that he's had the injury, and A-Rod saying, I'm healthy. I'm ready to play. And the Yankees said, no, you're not. You're going down to Tampa. You're going to do a little bit of rehab. And then you're going to possibly go out to another minor league game or whatever. But you're not ready to play yet. Now, and I was just about to say, and for the listening audience,
go ahead.
They may not know that I think if he's not actively playing by August 1st, they have an insurance policy that they can cash in on him and recoup some of the money or quite a bit of the money that is owed for him this year. Meaning after August 1st, if he happens to come and play, they can pay him, in my assumption, from the insurance money, and it doesn't have to come out of their pockets. You follow what I'm saying? So I think August 1st is a week, not a week, less than a week from today. It's next Thursday.
August 1st is next Thursday.
Right. So it looks like that's the game. I think they gave him a five-day plan. The 5 days that I guess we're going to reevaluate you or see how you are after 5 days. And reluctantly, he agreed to it. But there's a lot of drama going back and forth because he said, she said, he grabbed a doctor. They may fine him because he went to a doctor, a second opinion, without okaying it with them first. And this is just unbelievable. And it's just typical. This is just typical of some of the things that have been going on with the Yankees over the years, over many years. When George Steinbrenner was around, there was a lot of drama, a lot of he said, she said, and things like that. Now it's with the two Steinbrenner brothers, along with Brian Cashman, who's the GM, and A-Rod, who's just one lightning rod, either from Major League Baseball or from the Yankees. He's just a lightning rod. So we just have to wait until August 1st to see how this pans out and see if they're going to let him play or what's going to happen, or if Major League Baseball finally going to lay the hammer down on him. And I also said that he's going to get if he is given a suspension, he's going to appeal it, and appeal won't be heard until after the season is over, and it won't be implemented, if anything, next year. So, Ryan Braun, I know you probably want to bring up Ryan Braun. Ryan Braun opened up a can of worms.
I know what happened with him.
Ryan Braun opened up a can of worms when he took a plea deal, more or less. There's 20 guys out there where, in fact, there's 100 guys on the list. Now, nobody's talking, and I heard this on the program a few days ago, and he made a good point, the guy who's talking on the radio. Everybody's so infatuated and so keyed in on 20 guys that have been tested positive. Well, it's not 20 guys. It's 100. There's 100 players on the list.
Uh-huh.
But they're only talking about 20. So what about the other 80 that have been tested and tested positive and no one is talking about? But they're keying in on these big – a lot of them are named players.
But that's what they did the last time, though. I'm not surprised. That's what baseball did the last time. It was Barry Bonds. It was what's his name from St. Louis? Mark McGwire. It was Sosa. Baseball always, but I mean, that's the way society is. It's always a crime when a big name person does it. When a regular person does it, nobody gives a blip. Nobody cares about it. So, I mean, I'm not, do I feel sorry for baseball? No, because baseball doesn't learn their lesson from the last go round. And what they do is, and I know you can't control what a player does, but I think the only way baseball is ever going to solve the steroid problem or things like that is to have their own investigative force that checks out the people when they get a wind of something, checks out the people around them, and finds out who's around. And when you know there's a guy around you that owns a chem lab, okay, either you knock it off with the chem lab guy or you're going to get suspended. Or this guy is going to be removed from – I mean, I don't understand I know to a certain extent you can't control a player's life, but something needs to be in contracts that says if you're with a guy who owns a chemical lab or has any connections to steroids, you're automatically suspended. You're done for the year, period. You're done. And I think that would stop a lot of this because guys would be like, hey, man, I ain't even doing, I don't even need to be found out. And I know that sounds harsh, but, I mean, we keep going, baseball keeps going through this is because what they do is they clean these guys out, and then another guy comes along, and says, hey, you know what, I can build a better mousetrap, we can do this, and we won't get caught. Now I got
right.
it this way. Then they
right.
sweep them out again after a few years, and then they get another batch of guys who think they can do it better. So my thing is until they decide to get rid of these guys, I mean, the only person who can control these people are the players. And I don't care what nobody says. If a player had a contract that said, if you're associated with steroids, you get caught with steroids, we find a false test, if we hear you're fraternizing, you going to dinner, you hanging with these guys, we can void your contract. You're finished. Then people would start saying, you know what? I'm not going to talk to that guy. In fact, I'm not even going to bother with this dude. I don't want to talk to you. It would be a pariah. But until baseball does that, this is what they're always going to have because somebody's always going to cheat because of the money, because I want to keep my career going extra long. I want to do a little bit better so I can get that big bonus, so I can get that check. And it's a shame that it's come to that because when me and you were growing up, baseball was probably at its purest. You didn't have people testing for this and that and this and that. It was strictly – and here's the funny thing. How is it that these guys – can't stay healthy and got to use this stuff, and yet the guys who didn't use the stuff had great numbers too. So that tells you I don't know if it's honestly, what I'm starting to really think after all this time with this? It comes down to one word: laziness. Because I mean, we show the pictures of these guys working hard and working out, but for you to take chemicals to get an edge tells me that you ain't. So how is it that the guys in the 70s and the 80s and the 50s and the 40s, how is it that they could put up such astronomical numbers naturally, but what's so different about the human body now that you can't? That you can't do the same hard work that they do and put up the same kind of numbers with effort? I don't understand that.
The difference is these guys are doing more weight training and more muscle buildup than muscle exercises to build the muscles up than the guys back in the day.
Back in the day didn't do that
type of working out. And when you do that type of working out, it wears the body down that much faster. Because you're bulking up and you're doing a lot of weight training. You're bulking up. So you have a tendency, when you start bulking up, you have a tendency to pull muscles, and the injuries that you sustain are more traumatic because of the weight you put on, for one, and the muscle you built up in your body.
I get that, but I guess what I'm trying to say is the human body is still the human body, and you need to figure out how much weight training you need, not too much weight training to where you get hurt. I don't understand that with all the money you have, you can't find somebody who can balance weight training and proper diet and just naturally just play the game. I mean, I just what I'm saying is I understand the old guys didn't do weight training. And if they did, it wasn't this. Because let's be honest, in the 70s, that was when people did a lot of weight training because you had bodybuilding was really big in the United States because you had Schwarzenegger and all these other guys. And I'm saying, I guess what I'm trying to say is that the human body in itself has not changed. So the same things that work for the other guys are the same thing that works for you. Now, I understand weight training. Look at Tiger Woods. Golfers never lifted weights and did all that training until Tiger Woods came along. Nobody else did that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you need to temper it to where you don't get injured, where you don't bulk up. Because to me, I don't think a baseball player should be bigger than a damn football player. That's just me. Because I've seen small dudes hit the joint out the park. I mean, me and you grew up seeing dudes that was like, God dang, how do you put that one out 375 feet? You know what
right.
I'm saying? But it's
right.
just natural. It's ability, but it's also working out and preparation, which to me I can only attribute, when you look at all the things equally, the only thing I can come up with is laziness. You don't want to work that way. You don't want to do that hard work, because I just don't understand how this guy does with no weight did that, and yet they accomplished so much, and yet you guys have more ability, and you're doing all this extra stuff, and now you're, and then you end up taking, you know, HGH or something else. It just doesn't make sense to me, Jerry. It just really, really doesn't make sense to me.
Well, it's very competitive, compared to years past, compared to the 60s, 70s, 80s, and I guess starting into the 90s, the money now is astronomical.
Yeah.
So
what that does is guys that
Or hit the ball the furthest, or run the fastest, or throw the hardest, are going to get paid that much more than the guy that doesn't take weight training that seriously, or doesn't take that that one little injection or whatever. You follow me? So I mean,
no, I follow you, right?
That's one of the reasons why I think that Ryan Braun, A-Rod, and there's a lot others that have gotten tested positive, and there's a lot more that haven't tested gotten caught yet that are still out there are doing.
I think there are a lot of guys that won't get caught, or that they know about but won't go after, because it's like, well, he's nobody, you know.
Well, so, I don't know, man. I mean, you know,
everybody, look, Jerry, everybody who was in the last steroids thing, no, everybody didn't get caught that should have been, because they weren't names. They had who they wanted. When you get Bond, Sosa, McGuire and them, what the hell do I need some no-name dude who's on the end of a bench? What do I
right.
That's not going to do anything for me. If I get the headline, guess what? This is the guy. If I hook this fish, now everybody's going to feel like we're doing something about it in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to go
mm-hmm.
out there and know guy. They're like, who is this guy? Where is he? You know what I'm saying? So I'm saying there
right.
are guys who are doing it, who they know about, but they're going to get away with it, because they're not going to say anything to them, because they're not doing anything. You know, they're not high profile enough.
Right.
So,
right. I understand.
You know, that's just
yeah.
a shame. With that being said, there is something interesting I do want to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you may have seen it. I'm not sure. Have you seen, and I wanted your reaction to this, have you seen the talking points memo of Bill O'Reilly this week?
I don't want to talk about it.
But
don't
want to.
I mean, you could talk about it if you want. Don't want
I'm
to
asking,
talk about
see,
it.
But I'm asking, did
I,
you
oh,
see
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah, I saw it. I saw it.
Okay.
I saw it.
Okay. But here's what I'm saying. I'm not going to argue with you about it. I don't. But here's
mm-hmm.
what I want to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you. And have you watched it more than once? I guess that's what I'm asking.
No, I've watched it once. That was enough.
Okay. Let me ask you this question. Were there any mm-hmm. valid points in it at all?
Let me.
That's why I asked you,
I'll preface it like this. You can make numbers do anything you want to do when you put numbers out there. So when you put numbers out there, and statistics and percentages,
mm-hmm.
you can make them sway to any way you want to.
Mm-hmm.
So coming from that, from who it came from,
mm-hmm.
I don't put too much into it, because I consider the source. I consider the source, and if I consider the source and the agenda that source has,
mm-hmm.
then I dismiss it. Not totally,
okay,
but I dismiss it because there's an agenda there, and it's a dangerous agenda, saying that all black men are dangerous.
Okay. I mean, I watched it more than once, and I'll only say this. I don't think he said – I know he didn't say all, but I know he said But here's let me put this in my context so you understand. This way we won't I'll deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
As a Christian, I believe and I know that one of the reasons why God made the institute of marriage and said that marriage should be between a man and a woman, the same reason why he said God hates divorce and other things, is because, and the thing about fornication and things like that, all of these things line up with some of the things that he said. The breakdown of the family is definitely part of it. I grew up as a kid in a single family home and didn't have
my
father.
Same here.
Right. No, I get that. And you know, it's funny. Me and my wife had this discussion. And it
mm-hmm.
got heated between me and her. And
mm-hmm.
we usually don't get too heated.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she felt the same way you did. You know, she was
mm-hmm.
saying some of the points. Now with her, she said, now there were a lot of points in there that needed to be said, should have been said, and he was
mm-hmm.
right. Like
mm-hmm.
one of the things she believed is, you know what? Our black leaders do need to say these kind of things or say more and stop just saying it's about jobs and whatever. They're not saying, and as a black woman, she said, I'm a single mother and I had kids out of wedlock. She said,
mm-hmm.
you know, and as a Christian, she said that was wrong. And it does have an effect on your kids. She had four boys. So
mm-hmm.
she was like, it does have an effect on your kids. And she
mm-hmm.
said, as a Christian, now I understand why God instituted certain things in the Bible that says you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, because he knew these kind of issues that face young black men would happen, and white people too, and anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody in a
mm-hmm.
single home.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
because don't get me wrong, I don't think it's just us, okay? I don't. I know there's other people that do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she said the same thing about me. I said, yeah, but you know, because she was saying, your daughter grew up without, you know, you got divorced from your daughter's mother, and you weren't in her life every day. I said, yeah, but there's a difference. And here's what I told her. I'm not reading between the lines of what he's saying. What he's saying is, it's not necessarily, yes, father should be in the home, but if a father is not in the home, a father should be making regular visits, should be spending time with that child, should be calling that child, finding out what are you doing, taking an interest in that child, doing everything they can to have a relationship with that child. And I said, and I think that's the problem. Is the problem is that black men are having these kids out of wedlock and then leaving, or avoiding paying child support, or avoiding no visitation or whatever. And do I believe that the breakdown of family is a big part of our problem in the black community? Absolutely. I grew up, and I can tell you right now, in my growing up, I don't know one kid, not one kid that I was friends with that had a father in the home. Me growing up in Detroit, I don't
mm-hmm.
remember. All of us had, all of them were mostly single mamas. Mostly all of us.
Okay.
Before
you go any further, now,
mm-hmm.
why do you think that was? Do you think it had something to do with the economy? You think it had something to do with opportunity not being available to make any money where you were at? Your father or fathers having to go somewhere else to get a decent income, or you think that it was just a matter of I gave you a baby and now I'm out of here.
I think in those days when I was coming up, I can only go by my own experience of what was told to me by my mother and was. And was verified by my father.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm now as an adult,
mm-hmm.
You know, had me, was with my mother, and cheated on my mother while he was in college, and
okay.
decided to be with her instead of with my mama because, my mother is the type of person that holds a man accountable. But she just ain't gonna let you just do what you want and just be like, yeah, you know, it's like, all right, well, you know, you can roll, you know. But they, however it happened, when I was 2 and a half, he left.
Okay.
I never saw my father, but once when I was probably around 10 or 11 years old, and I never saw my father again until I was almost 23 years old.
Okay.
Now, mind you, I'll give you an example. Now, mind you, my father came to visit me, but my stepfather at the time, who my mother was with, pulled a gun on my father. I thought,
well,
this is what I heard from my father.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided, it ain't worth it. I ain't coming back.
Right.
Okay.
Well, that is what I was just about to say. Now,
right.
A lot of times, and I know you know this, because our women can be very vindictive at times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Say a lot of bad things about
mm-hmm.
baby daddy,
mm-hmm.
and to make baby turn against daddy for one, and
mm-hmm.
do a lot of things to keep daddy away from baby.
Mm-hmm.
That can happen. Now, I'm not saying that happens all the time, but that does happen quite
mm-hmm.
a bit.
I don't. Right, you're absolutely right. But here's what I want to say though.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody. But here's when I remember, and I'm gonna tell you what it is when I had my child, my first child, and I remember going to the child support, and
mm-hmm.
asking them to open a case, so that I could have visitation with my daughter, and
mm-hmm.
I remember distinctly. The people at the child support laughing at me. They thought I was freaking nuts.
Because
in those days,
you came there volunteer.
Those days, they thought that was totally cuckoo. Like,
right.
You volunteering to come down here to open a case on yourself so you can
mm-hmm.
see your child?
Yep.
Like, they laughed at me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so at that time, it wasn't like it is now. Let me finish my point, because you threw me off, but it was a good point what you were saying. I'm going to go back to
mm-hmm.
that. But let me say this. What I'm saying to you is this.
Mm-hmm.
In coming up, I just think a lot of the fathers, for whatever reason, left, they got separated, divorced, fell out, whatever. But here's my point. Nobody could stop me from seeing my daughter if I really wanted to see her. Nobody.
Well,
I may have to go through hell and high. No, listen to me. I may have to go through hell and high water, but if I love
mm-hmm.
them, here's my point. I can understand a time, but there's no way a child should go from a child to an adult and not be able to spend time with their fathers at some point in those 18 years.
Well,
that's just totally cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I mean, there's just no excuse for that.
I agree with that. But
what I'm saying to you is that, yes, it was an incident where my father was, but let's be honest. My father never called. My father never sent cards. I had to call. If I didn't call him, he didn't call me. If I called him, I asked him for something for my birthday, he promised me and not send it. He would say he was going to come see me, and he didn't. So here's my thing. So do I hold my mother responsible for that? No, I don't. Because my mother, as much as she didn't like my father when I was growing up, she never said, I don't want you to see your father. She never said, I don't want him around you. The conversation was always, she was always real with me about my father. But did I believe her? Yes. But did I find out everything she said from me about my father was true? And yeah, I found out everything was true about my father. You know, so I guess what I'm trying to say to you is this. All I'm trying to say to you is this. No matter why a man leaves and it's a single family home, it damages the son, because God meant for a father to raise a son and
right.
a son to be raised by a father. He meant for
mm-hmm.
a daughter to be raised by a mother. He did not. He never intended, when you look through the Bible, he never intended a woman to raise a man by herself.
Well,
nurturer. She was the nurturer,
mm-hmm.
and the
mm-hmm.
man was the disciplinarian. He was the person
right.
who took a boy out and said, let me show you what it's like to be a man, because he's a man, because he knows
mm-hmm.
what it's like. Because I've always said this, and in fact I just said it today, is I told, I can't remember who I was talking to, I said, a woman can be around a man for 60 years, 100 years, 200 years, but she will never know what it's like to be a man like another man. I said, and only a man, women can do great, and God can bless them and enable them and empower them to raise a man. He can, because God is merciful and God is great, and he'll put people, or he'll put mentors or other men in your life to help bring you along, if you know what have you. But it wasn't meant to be that way, and the child always takes away. But I can tell you this. I would have been the same kid out there getting into the same trouble, and I'm talking about my childhood. I would have been out there getting in trouble with the same kids doing the same stupid things if my mother wasn't as disciplined and wasn't as cuckoo and crazy as she was. And when I say cuckoo and crazy, I don't mean it in a real way. I'm talking about in a I will whoop your ass way. I will,
yes, honestly,
you know,
I know exactly what you're talking
about. I will kill you. Right, right, exactly. So I was more afraid of my mother than I was of doing what I wanted to do. So I was disciplined, and I had discipline in the home.
And you know
what I'm trying to, but what I'm saying is the kids who did not have the fathers and did not have the discipline and did not have the mothers at home that inner discipline, like when Bill O'Reilly said, derelict parents. There were a lot of derelict parents, and the kids who were in the gangs in Detroit when I was coming up, the kids who were out robbing gas stations, the kids who was out sticking people up, the kids who were out riding four deep in a car and going out and shooting up stuff, the kids who were in trouble. I'm not talking about high school. I'm talking about before we got to high school. I'm talking about elementary and junior high. Those were the kids who did not have a father, a derelict parent in the house, couldn't control them, hanging out at night. I never hung out at 11, 12, 2 o'clock in the morning outside. Man, that ain't part of my language in my childhood. I didn't do that. So you knew that the kids who did do that had people at home that didn't care. So what I'm saying is, and we still have that even now. We still have that now. I mean, how many times have you drove down the street or drove somewhere at 1 and 2 in the morning and you got an underage kid walking around the street? And you're like, what the hell is he doing out here this late at night by himself?
Mm-hmm.
Or two of them, or whatever. There's usually a derelict parent at home who's not worried about that, who's worried about themselves or what have you. So here's what I'm trying to say. Here's the fair thing. It's true that a man not being in a home does lead to certain things. It does lead to poverty. The Bible talks about leading to poverty when you don't have both parents in the home and you have a kid, because you leave them without a leader. You lead. That's what parents are here for. We're here to lead, to teach, to guide. You know, that's why God tells us. And when we don't do that and we leave one parent out, it just ups the odds of a person being in trouble, getting in trouble and having a hard time. But all I'm saying to you is that the kids that I know growing up, I know that the statistic he said about 77%, I've looked it up. It is true. I know people don't like to hear that, but it is true. We are killing each other. We are violent toward each other. We can't have look at each other. We can't have talk to each other. We can't have express ourselves to each other. You know, and you know, you got kids growing up in different backgrounds in different areas and feeling like I can't get it, so I'm gonna take it. You know, and you don't have those parents out there who say, you know, they don't have a Jerry who says, hey, you know what? Go get a paper route. You know what? Go out to school and go do this and go do that, earn the money and get what you get, and show them what the feeling is of working hard and accomplishment and getting something that you worked hard for, as opposed to go take it and then deal with the system. And then you got, and I had people that when I was coming up, I was talking to my good friend Keith, who's known me all my life since elementary school. And, you know, I was telling him how I grew up all my life with black men telling me how the white man was a bad guy, and we ain't never had no shot. We could never get nothing because somewhere there's a group of them that was trying to stop us from getting it and hated us and didn't want us to have nothing. And I believed, and what I came to believe is somewhat of what Malcolm X was when he said, well, of course, they killed him for it, but when he discovered that they're good, it doesn't matter what race, they're good and bad in every race. There are racists in every race. It's nothing. So all I'm saying to you is this, is that I know you didn't, I thought, to be honest with you, I agree with most of what he said, but I knew that because of it was being a white man and it being Bill O'Reilly and it being on a conservative and it being on a Republican or whatever you want to call it, conservative, Tea Party, whatever network, I knew it wouldn't be received. But to be honest with you, I honestly wish, and if I could change anything, I would wish that Bill O'Reilly never said it. You know what I wish? I wish Sharpton had said it. I wish Jackson would have said it. I wish Obama would have said it. I wish somebody black had said that, because had they said it, it would have been heard. And I think it wouldn't have been taken the way it was taken. But I knew when he said it, I said, it's the truth. A lot of it's the truth. But it's not going to be received because of the messenger.
I understand what you're saying, Mac. The only thing I just say the only thing, but one of the key things I had a problem with is he's looking into the camera, and subtly, subtly saying, white America, you need to fear black men. That's what he's saying, subtly. He didn't come out. He almost came out and said, you need to fear black men because black men are out to get you. And I had a serious issue with that.
Okay, but let me ask you this question. Why is it that all the time when a white person says anything about us or about a race, why is it always interpreted? Why is it never taken for what it said as opposed to why is it always interpreted as something? I've never heard a person say he said this. They always say he was almost saying he was. It's like we interpret what he said. But I'm saying why?
You don't think he said that? You don't think he didn't come blatantly out and say that.
But in so many words, he did say that. No, but you want to know what I think he said? I can tell you exactly what I think he said. And I'm going to be honest with you. A lot of what Bill O'Reilly is how I felt since I was a teenager about us. Not in a bad way, in a way of being sad, mm-hmm. Of being embarrassed. Like, I don't want my people to be like this. But let me say it to you. Let me say what I know he said. First of all, he put out the stat. So that way, it's like, it's not my feeling. Here's the stat. Here's what he said. When people go rob a bank, we've all seen the cop shows. When people go rob a bank, when people go do stuff they're not supposed to do, or they're trying to do something, or they're trying to rob somebody or do something, whatever, most people wear something black, or they wear something, whatever, and they wear hoods, or they wear masks on their face, or they wear whatever. Okay, this is what they wear. What he was saying was, and he said Zimmerman was wrong, to assume and approach him because of what he wore. But he said, and it's the same thing, if I see a guy out at 2 o'clock at night, I don't care whether he's black, white, Puerto Rican, Chinese, or whatever, you come up to me with a hoodie, I'm going to feel like I don't know who the hell you are, and I'm going to be prepared for anything. And you walk past me, I'm going to damn sure look around and find out if you're coming up behind me. I don't care who you are. Because people who do crime and people who do things like that usually do sometimes wear hoodies, wear masks. That's why they tell you don't come into a bank with mask in the wintertime and take your hood off, take your hat off, because that kind of stuff. So all I'm saying to you is that I don't think he said fear black men. What he was saying was here's what the statistics say, and then he said here's why this happened and why people fear them because of this. He was telling why, and then he said how to solve it. And he said, and he told the root cause. He said the root cause is because there's a breakdown of the family in America. There are a lot of us and any black person will tell you, we have a high birth rate. We're having kids. We're having single women having marriage out of wedlock. We popping out babies like crazy. The only person who pop them out as much as we is Hispanic. Let me give you
my theory on this. My theory is twofold. One, things like that happen because of a breakdown in education and also economic. Those two factors have a big cause for what you're talking about. Huge factors. Because just think about it. Mm-hmm. How many highly educated people do the things that the uneducated do? You follow me?
Some women do, but they turn around. Something changes, now, something turns them around. You're right. I'm saying typically
mm-hmm.
an Ivy League black kid or traditional black college graduate black man typically doesn't do that anymore. But if you're telling me that their teenagehood might not have been rough and they might have done a couple things and then got a chance and changed their life, yeah. But I get what you're saying. Typically, you're right.
Typically, male or female, doesn't have to be mm-hmm. a man. I'm talking about male mm-hmm. or female.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If they get a good education
mm-hmm.
and quite naturally that good education leads mm-hmm. to a good employment,
okay.
You don't have a high birth rate. Most of the time, you don't have single parent families, and you don't have a high crime rate from those people. Am I right about that?
I won't say in every case, but you're probably right. But let me ask you this. Okay. So you asked me that. So let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this. So whose fault is it when the kid has no father, the mother sends the child to school, and the child don't want to learn and cuts up and acts a fool in school, and the parent is not disciplining but comes to the school? Now, remember, I work in the school system. So what happens when that parent comes and makes excuses for Peter, Paul, Mary, and Jane, or Keith, Kevin, or whatever, and they make an excuse for him, and they're not really helping him because they're not disciplining him, they're not dealing with the fact that he just punched his kid in the face and the thing, they're not talking to him about the fact that he's in the room cussing in front of the teacher. These kids now, they cussing in high school in front of the teachers like they ain't even there. When we came up, you didn't cuss in front of a teacher. You looked around to see what you was going to say if you was going to say something. You said it outside on the playground or around your friends. You ain't say nothing about it. You know, the first thing they said is, here come the teacher, you shut up, or you change your language. You know, so what I'm saying to you is, what he said was true in the fact that it goes down to parents. Because kids can only get a good education when the parents are working. Like for instance, I went to school. My mother came to parent-teacher conferences. My mother came to the school and found out what was going on with me and held me accountable by what the teacher said. My mother did. She put in the work to help me get it. Because I don't care. Here's my thing. Because here's my theory. And this is what I learned from my mother and learned from other mothers that I've seen, my aunts and other people that I've seen. If you're a parent that's involved, I don't care. Here's my thing. I don't care how bad a school is. I don't care how bad a teacher is. I don't care if a school is that good or not. And I'll tell you this. If you go find me a teacher that finds her best student and find out and ask her, is the parent involved? And I can bet you 110% that parent's involved. That parent is working with that teacher and doing the work. And most of the parents out here are not doing the work. They're going to work. They're caring about whatever they got to do. They don't care about Johnny and Jane. They think high school or elementary school is a babysitting service. Man, just take care of my kid between the hours of 7:30 and 2:30, and we good. And they come back and they get up. So here's my point. My point is you're right about education. You're right about the opportunities. But what happens when you're not pushed, when you're not taught that, when you're not guided that? That's not a white person's fault. That's not a black person's fault. That's not nobody else's fault but a parent, because that parent in the home is the one who has to be responsible for leading that child. So I'm saying that what he was saying is that when they come from a broken home and there's not a family, and then he said you have to put more discipline in schools, because let's be honest, when we came up, Jared, come on, man, you got a paddle in school. You didn't come in and just flip out on a teacher. You was going to get it.
Yeah,
and
well,
then you
don't have to tell me that.
You came home.
You don't have to tell me that. I've gotten it more than once. I know
exactly.
That. I know
I was
exactly
getting,
right.
Like I'm saying, I was getting it. And the thing about it is now you can't touch kids. Now kids can turn around and damn near beat the hell out of a teacher, and you can't touch them. And if you do, you lose your job.
Right.
So what I'm saying to you is I'm not putting down your point, but what I'm saying is what Bill was saying is that we keep hollering about schools. And we keep hollering about education and healthcare and deny these opportunities, but what we're not talking about is personal responsibilities that these kids. I'm not talking about elementary school,
because
you got to lead them. But I'm talking about high school kids who come into a class and don't want to learn. High school kids who skip class. High school kids who don't. I see them every day during school year. They literally make a decision. I'm not going to class. Don't let it be a sub. I'm not going to class. Man, come on, man, let's go to the gym. Let's get up off this campus and go do something. Come on, man, y'all need to come on to class and start doing this. You know, and then talking about, or I'm not going to go to that class because I don't need that class to graduate. Come on, man. That's what I'm saying. This is what people don't see because you ain't in the school. Not you, but I'm saying a lot of people who are hollering about the school system and we need better schools and we need this, we need that. No, schools need to be more rigid and more disciplined in schools, but we took it out. Like he said, school uniforms. It needs to be school uniforms because you got kids. Man, I went to school last year. You know how many kids in there? Man, these kids got better shoes than I do. These kids got more shoes than I did. Dude, some of these kids wore Nikes every day for the whole school year. Jerry, I didn't see them wear the same shoes twice.
Really?
I never saw them wear the same shoes twice. And these are kids who are spoiled. They're not going to school. They don't have to go to class. They cut class. They're disrespectful to the teachers. And here's what I'm saying. And we're not talking about poor kids. We're talking about kids live out here in Charles County. live in PG County, a rich county, nice house, nice car. Both parents got a good job. Maybe they have both parents, maybe they don't, and the kids are still
That's the point I'm making, man.
Right.
That's one of the points I'm making. It's not doesn't necessarily mean that it's a single parent. My mother brought up eight kids.
Right.
Eight kids. My brother
died.
I'm 59 years old. My father mm-hmm. died when I was 10 years old, and my mother mm-hmm. had eight kids to bring up on her own.
Right.
Her own. Wait a minute. I want to make this point because mm-hmm. I took exception to what Mr. O'Reilly said. Just for mm-hmm. this point, he looked into the freaking camera and said, more or less, to be afraid of black men. I'm telling you this. My mother brought six boys, two girls.
Mm-hmm.
Not one of them
mm-hmm.
spent time in jail. Not
I give you that.
One of them.
Right, right.
Not one right. of them.
I give you that. But remember, here's what you're forgetting, Jerry. Jerry, he said there's 77%, they do crime 77%, he was saying, young black men. It has nothing to do, but what I'm trying to say is, I don't read, when I heard that stat, that's a legit stat. There's 77, on the average, there's 77%. That has nothing to do, okay, your mother did a great job. My mother did a great job. Other mm-hmm. mothers did a great job. But see, the problem, what I have a problem with us is that we always take, we got to stop, we got to look past the messenger and look at the message.
Wait a minute. But I understand what you're saying, Mac. But
he didn't
let me
take,
sort of,
but why does
wait
everybody,
wait
why does
wait
everybody take
wait
a white
minute,
person
let me,
to say,
let me say this.
He said,
let me say this.
Black
let me say
men.
This.
He never said all.
Let me say this. He said 73% of black men, okay?
He said 77. Now, no, he said there's 77. They commit 70. They are 77% commit violent crimes. He said 10 times more than Hispanics and whites or whatever combined. So he's saying there's an epidemic with them doing things, which we know in Chicago. Come on, man! Every weekend, it's ridiculous. In Detroit, every weekend, it's ridiculous.
But my point is this. Now, and I'm not dismissing it this way, but. My point is this. When he says that, is he saying it's against his own race or is it against someone opposite race? Because that makes a difference. Because when he looks in the camera and – wait a minute.
But he said something about Chicago, which Chicago is not shooting. They're not shooting. They're shooting each other. They're not shooting.
Be right with it. Be right with it.
Damn it.
That makes a difference because the mm-hmm. fact is – There's a huge epidemic, and I know this, and mm-hmm. you know this, mm-hmm. black-on-black mm-hmm. crime. Now, he didn't mm-hmm. say that. All he said was 73% or 77% of the violent crimes are done by black men. So he's saying that he didn't say whether the majority of that is a black-on-black crime. He's just saying America. And he's looking at it because the base he's looking at is white mm-hmm. America. So he's mm-hmm. saying to white America, you need to be afraid of black men because they're coming to get you.
But why? How did you get that from that though? That's why I asked you. That's why I asked
wait,
you.
Because
more than
because
once?
The fact is because the fact is he just said 77% of the violent crimes are done by black men. He didn't say. You know,
done by young black men, right?
Wait a minute, but he also
said something in there about Chicago, which is evident with Chicago, which is black on black. So, but here's the thing: you see that, but why don't you see the fact that he didn't just say that and then just say, "Hey, look, white America." Basically, what I'm saying is, be scared of the black man. Okay, now
yes,
on to the next subject.
Absolutely.
He offered why it was happening. And he offered a solution, and he held the black leadership accountable, saying, "When is the last time you've heard a public service announced by the NAACP, by Sharpton, by Jackson that says when do we have we had a commercial campaign that said that told black women to stop getting pregnant out of wedlock? When have we ever seen that? When have we ever seen that? What I'm saying is, Jerry, it wasn't just. I understand where you're coming from, and I understand it because I know how you feel." And I know
mm-hmm.
that's how it was going to be received by us because we're very sensitive and offended people. We get offended real quick when we hear something, especially when it comes from a source that we think has no right to say it. But the fact of the matter is, if he don't say it, Sharpton ain't going to say it. Jackson ain't going to say it. The NAACP going to say it. But they are. But here's my point. But this is coming from a black man who is very proud and loves my own people. But at the same time, it's like my family. Like I told you before, my family, I got some nice people in my family, and I got some screwed up people in my family. But
everybody
I'm gonna tell them flat out. How they are. And what I'm saying is, we need as black African Americans need to move beyond who is saying it and look at the information and say and stop jumping on and saying, well, he just said this. Well, he just said all black people. And it's like, no, he like disseminate and listen to what he said, because if Jackson or Sharpton or any black man that we look up to had said that same speech, we might have been offended. Might even have been mad, might even said that's real wrong. But I tell you this much, the conversation wouldn't have been as mad, and we wouldn't have took as offense as quickly. We would have listened to that. So what I'm saying is, Jerry, why can't we, and I wish we could, as African Americans, look at stuff first, look at it, disseminate it, find out what it really is, but instead we listen to it one time, we turn it off, we get pissed off, and we say, you know what, that ain't true, that's bull crap. Like right
now.
No,
I didn't say that.
But you've interpreted everything he said basically this way. Basically, Bill O'Reilly said, fear all black men. And if you had listened to it and really broke it down and listened to it again and understood it, there's things in there you could have said, you know what, okay, I might take that point. I don't like that he said it. But you know what? I can take that. The breakdown of the family—that's absolutely correct. The fact
that's along all races. That has nothing just to do with black.
I understand
along all
that,
races.
But here's the thing. But here's the problem. The problem is, Jerry, is that the fact of the matter is the epidemic is with us. That's the truth of the matter. If the epidemic is with us. And the fact of the matter is that we're the ones shooting and killing each other more than any other race. We're doing it. That's a fact. And that's something's got to be done about that. And blaming it on just saying we don't get no opportunities, we don't got no good schools, we don't got this and that is not the only reason. What he's saying, what he was saying in the Talking Points memo is he didn't just say he presented a stat. He presented why the stat was, which made perfect sense, which is right. And then he said, and here's what should be done about it. And all he was basically saying is, here's what the stats say. Here's the reason why these stats are the way they are. Here's the reason why it happened. Here's what a solution should be. And why are black leaders who are out here doing this, instead of running around telling everybody, instead of hustling everybody? You know how long, for 47 years, I've heard more black people all my life blame everything on white people. Hold on. You can't blame everything on white people when you make a decision to go into a liquor store and stick it up. I'm sorry, you can't do that. That's your choice. You can't do that. I don't understand that. Like, people go make – we as African Americans make these choices to go do these things, and then the problem I have with us is that we make a decision to say, you know what, poor child, he went there and robbed that place. You know what, if we had more schools and we'd had better education and better teachers, if we had better opportunities, he wouldn't go in there and stick up that liquor store. Well, guess what, I know Johnny who went there and stuck up that liquor store, and I know his mama got a full-time job, and I know he got Jordans at home, and I know he's good. You know why he wouldn't decide to rob it? Because five other dudes who don't got no daddies, who are deviant, decided to tell him, and he's influenced because his father's out there, he decided to go follow them and go get a good hustle. He did it one time, got some money out of it, said, you know what, I like this better than going out working. Why should I work? But I can go in here and go do this. And then they graduate to other things. Then they start smoking weed. Then they start doing. These are all decisions that are made by individual. Yes, a teenager. Yes, a child. But when the mama's not there and she's not doing her duty, what happens? What happens when they go to school and they decide to skip school? Who forced that kid? Who stuck a gun to that kid's head and told him, don't go to school? He decided not to go to school because, you know why? I don't want to go to school. I want to go hang out all day over at Katrina's house and drink and get drunk and hang out with all my other friends who really aren't your friends, but I want to go do that. Here's my point. Here's my point, Jerry. Jerry, legitimately, I understand where you're coming from, and I respect your opinion, because the simple fact is I can understand where you're coming from, because if I didn't know what I know, I probably would have took it the same way. But here's the deal. The deal is, the problem is that we watch TV, and we see somebody saying something, and we don't know, and we, here's the problem, we don't know every one of those kids. We only know the stats. We know it's a problem for a fact. We know that we're killing each other, but we never, we rarely, our leaders, I'm not talking about regular people, our leaders, you, me, Vic, other people who are living, down here with everybody else. We're not elites or whatever. We see the kids. We see and know the kids. We've even said some of these kids are deviant, and some of them got, and some of them got parents, and they still deviant. So, so what I'm trying to say to you is that I'm saying is the problem is that we don't, is that we're getting offended because this man tells us something, but what we're not doing is we're not looking at it and saying, do I know that kid? Yes, I know that kid. I know that kid. I've seen that kid when I was growing up. I've seen a lot of them like that. So what I'm saying is what he's saying is not far-fetched, but my problem is that we as African-Americans and our leaders, instead of going up on, jumping on every time it's a sensational crime, you know, I never hear Sharpton, I never hear Jackson, so-called leaders, which I don't think they're leaders at all. I think they're hustlers, and I think they hustle us, and they do, and they're making a whole lot of money doing it, and they're shaking down companies every time they do something to somebody. What I'm saying to you is this, is that they're playing this game of the white man out to get you, white man going to get you. We ain't got no opportunities. We need schools and everything else. But I don't see them, but I don't see any, I don't see us as a black, as African-Americans taking responsibility for our kids and saying, you know what, it's not the school sometimes. You know what, it's not the school most times. It's personal choice. It's what you decided to do. That kid had a school in front of him. There are kids with good schools who don't decide to go to school and skip and bad grades and don't want to do it. And it has nothing to do, it has nothing to do with education. It has nothing to do with some white man somewhere. It has to do with the kid made a choice. He want to be lazy and he don't want to take his black ass to school. That's what it is. I was that kid at some time. I felt like skipping school. The only difference why I didn't skip is because I knew if my mama ever came out, I'd die. So I was like, I went home. I wasn't going to do that. So all I'm saying to you, Jerry, is we need to wake up and stop being – I wish we would just stop being so offended and start looking at the information. But, see, I just think that we get tricked into, well, the white man said it, and we interpret everything wrong instead of looking at it and saying, you know.
I've been trying to get this point across. What I'm saying is this. He said – the 77% of black men commit the most violent crimes. The 77% of black men.
They
commit
10 times more. Right.
Right. But now his next thing, in my opinion, would be, but whatever for whatever percentage, those crimes are black on black crimes versus a black on white, black on Asian, or something like that. Now. Now, if he had broken it down like that, that's a different thing than just saying women. That's a different thing than saying most violent crimes by black men is 77% or whatever way he phrased it. So that's saying to me that America, when he's looking in the camera, look out for black men because they're coming for you. That's exactly what he's saying. Because he didn't break it down. He just said majority of those crimes, 77% of those crimes, the majority of those are black on black. Now, I'm not justifying black on black crimes, but when he makes a blanket statement like 77% of the violent crimes are done by black men, he's looking in the camera saying, America, white America, look out because they're coming for you.
But that's how, and that's your interpretation of it. But that's not what he's saying.
Absolutely.
But what I'm saying is,
I understand what you're saying.
But Jerry, let me ask you something. I understand exactly
what you're saying.
I understand, but Jerry, but I'm saying, what difference does it make? That's how
it makes a big difference.
That's how a lot of people. But I'm just saying, but it makes a big difference
because white America thinks that already. So Bill O'Reilly just reaffirming what white America thinks. Anyway,
I got what you're saying. But what I'm saying is,
and all mass murderers are white.
When do we move? But here's
all
my point.
All mass murderers are white.
Yeah, most of them are white. Most of them are white mass murderers. We ain't doing
all mass murderers. There's only one that I can think of, maybe in Atlanta. But all other ones are white.
Exactly. And guess what? White people wouldn't be offended. They would say, you know what? You're probably right. If the stats backed it up, okay, cool. We're the only, us and Latinos are the most offended people I've ever seen. We hear something, it could be a true stat, and just based off who it said, It's just it's interpretation.
But,
it's based on
but,
how I
but,
take it.
Like I said, if you can skew the numbers any way you want, and he skewed the numbers. You don't understand what I'm saying. That the fact may be right. 77% of the violent crimes are done by black men. But what those violent crimes are done to? Are they done to more blacks than whites? He didn't say that. He said
77%
of the crimes are done by black men.
But I'm saying, when do we move beyond being offended at how it was said and what we thought they meant to where we start doing something about it and holding our black leaders responsible to say that,
Mac, I understand what you're saying.
If Jackson and Sharpton and the rest of them were saying that, what Bill O'Reilly said, he would have never said it.
Well, let me put it this way.
Let me
tell you something. If anybody said that, okay, 77% of the violent crimes are done by black men. Now, what's the breakdown of the crimes they're doing against? Who are they doing those crimes against? The majority of them are against what, black people? It makes a big difference. It makes a big difference. It makes
Why?
A big difference because regardless of what anybody thinks, regardless of what anybody is willing to say, there's more to be said when a black does a violent crime against a white than a black does a violent crime against a black. There's more outrage, and that's why that you don't hear more about black on black crime than we should. But when a black guy or somebody black, a woman, black guy does a violent crime against somebody opposite his race, it's a big thing. And I'm telling you, and I can't believe you don't understand what I'm saying here. Bill O'Reilly is placating to a certain audience. And when he says that, without breaking it down on who's getting the most of those violent crimes, regardless of who it is, he's saying a blanket statement. He's skewing the numbers, basically, because he's saying 77% of the violent crimes are done by black men. He's looking in the camera and saying, "White America, you better watch out." He didn't say that. Most of those, and I got to believe most of those violent crimes are against people of his own race versus people of an opposite race. So you got to believe that, Mac. Come on, man.
I hear what you're saying, but what I'm saying is until we as African Americans move beyond, it's like, you know what it's like? It's like somebody saying, "I drank this drink." And you're like, "Did it taste good?" And you're like, "Yeah, it tasted good, but it had this piece of ice in it. And the piece of ice just kept floating, and I just didn't like that piece of ice." And you're like, "But did you enjoy the drink?" You're like, "Yeah, I understand about the drink. It was cool and everything. But that piece of ice really bothered." And it's like, really? Like, at what point do we get that's the trick. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to say this, and I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say this. It's a trick of the devil that we sit and fall. He always gets us in offense. And we totally miss the message because we're so busy worrying about how it was told, how it's broken down, how we interpret it, and then what we do is we throw it away. It's like when you say to your kids to do something and they don't do it, but if their friends come along and say it's a great idea, and you get so pissed. It's like, when do we get past? Here's my thing. I want young black men to stop doing the stuff they're doing. I want it to change.
Well, absolutely.
I don't want us to look like that. So here's my point. So here's my point. Screw the way Bill O'Reilly said it. Let's move beyond that. What are we going to do about them? And guess what? Since he put out something, a reason why and what, let's overlook the fact that, okay, he didn't break it down. Who cares? The fact is, he's dealing with the subject.
Oh, my God, I can't believe he said that.
Because, Jerry, Jerry, if I want to save my – wait a minute. If a doctor came and told me how to cure cancer, what do I care whether he told me how much cancer black people have more than white people? If he going to tell me in there why she got the cancer and how to cure it, guess what I'm saying? How do I cure it? Man, I don't care if he broke it down by white or black.
Man, I'm telling
how do I cure
it? I'm telling you, Mac, I'm telling you. I'm telling you.
Jerry,
the white people who are scared of us.
Jerry, the white people who are scared of us have been scared of us. The people who don't like us because of our skin color, guess what? They still don't like us because of our skin color. The people
out there who fear us and saying something like that on TV. It's just a reaffirmation, and even give somebody else who's on the edge of thinking one way or the other, affirmation, or this is the way I should think, because now he tells me I got to be afraid of black people, and I got to tighten that purse. I got to look my shoulder at that black person because he may be at my back, and the guy may be in a higher economic status than the person right in front of him, but because he's black, they got a perception from Bill O'Reilly that we got to watch out for black men because they're perpetrators. They're
right.
Perpetrators.
And guess what? We do the same thing to white people. White people are racist. If you don't agree with Obama, you're racist. If you don't like his policies, I'm not saying you, Jerry. Jerry, we holler and scream more about this Zimmerman case after this Zimmerman verdict, after all the evidence was seen. People sat here, black people sat here and watched this thing all the way through. And now, at the end, when we don't like the verdict, which the thing about it is there wasn't enough there for second-degree murder. There wasn't enough there for manslaughter. When you look at the facts of the case, it was what it was. But here's the crazy part. After the thing, guess what happened? People go out beating somebody else up, hating white people, doing all this stuff. We're doing the same thing that you just described to me. When you say stuff like when Sharpton and Jackson and them say that kind of stuff, guess what they're saying? They're saying the same thing about white people. All black people be afraid of white people. How many black people, Jerry, in front of that TV? I know you watch TV like I do. How many black people on that TV set said they're hunting down our black men or they're looking for our black? I've heard them. I know who said it. Don't tell me they don't say it. And you're sitting here saying that the same guy, that this white guy said the same thing. Yet he put up stats, he put up why, he put up a cure, and he put up why you should, or tried to bring up a solution and said, and held black leaders accountable. But then when people go on TV and say stuff like, you know, Trayvon was shot down in cold blood, you know, the justice system ain't fair, and white folks this, and wait a minute, now white people are hunting our kids down. Now we got to watch out for our young black men because now they're going to be hunted by white folks. Now they can shoot them down in the street. Come on, dude. I heard that since that thing. So here's the thing. Hold them accountable just like you hold Bill. If you're going to be offended by that, then you should be the same person to say, you know what, we shouldn't be saying that kind of stuff because they're doing the same thing that you could accuse Bill O'Reilly of doing. We're doing the same thing.
Let me tell you something, man. I've been around a long time. And long before I was on this earth, and long before I'm going to be back, I'm gone. it's going to be the same old.
Right.
And I usually don't say things like this, but it's going to be the same old shit. Meaning that there's going to be racial disharmony in this country, and it's never going to end.
Jerry, Jerry, let me tell you something. As long as there is a devil, there will always be racial unharmony on this because that's what he uses. That's what he uses to trick us and get us into wars and get us into stuff and not to hear the things that we should hear. Trust me, I believe you. I know that. I know there will never be a day until this earth is gone, destroyed, and God makes another earth and another heaven. There will always be racial disharmony. I agree with you on that. But all I'm saying to you is that I'm talking about us, and all I want is what you want. I want us to be better. I want our young black men to be better. I want our young black I want parents to hold their kids disciplined and stop letting them go around here cussing and doing the crazy stuff they do. be disciplined at home. I want somebody who goes to the school with their kid and takes interest in what they're learning. Ask the teacher what you're doing and hold the kids accountable when they're not doing what they're supposed to. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying the schools need to be more disciplined. I believe in school uniform. You know, do I believe in school choice? I believe absolutely in school choice. I want our young black men to be better. I want them to be looked at better, perceived better. I want them to be looked in a different light. Do I think that will ever change? I don't think so. Not when you got guys out here, like I said, the one thing, everything that dictates, and this is what nobody talks about either, what dictates what comes out of your mouth, what you believe inside, and what how you feel in your emotions and what you learn is based off what goes through your eyes and in your ears. And let's be honest. There's a lot of trash music and trash things out here that we're putting our eyes in front of and putting in our ears with these big Dre beat things on, and we're hearing this stuff. When you hear a guy like Lil Wayne say, "I'm gonna beat the P up like Emmett Till," are you serious? Are you serious?
Yeah I know, man.
You
don't tell me. I know.
And then you wait a minute. And then I find out yesterday that Lil Wayne, and this is the funny thing, Lil Wayne, production company or record company is Cash Money, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You do know that Al Sharpton has a book coming out by Cash Money Publishing. I just want you to know that. Go look that up. Cash Money Publishing is permanent.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you be a guy who stands with that kind of trash and garbage, but then you go sign with the people with them to go run that? I mean, this is what I'm talking about. I'm not trying to, here's my thing. I love my people, Jerry. Just know my heart, man. I'm sick. I've grown in the hood. I know. But the simple fact is, all my life I've been hearing, do I know there's racism? Yes, you know me, man. I know that. I ain't saying it's all peachy keen and it's cool. I'm not saying that. Okay, I'm just a brother who learned to ignore it and learned to go past it. I'm too focused on doing what I'm doing to worry about who's following me through a store. Because I got the money, I'm gonna go buy the jeans and leave out the store. I don't care about all that.
There's more to it than somebody following you in the store.
There's more ways that
certain people can hold you down without being physically in front of you. So,
no, and you're absolutely right. I give you that. And that's where my faith comes in. Now, some people think I'm kind of cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, maybe think I'm crazy or whatever, but God has gone around a lot of people who tried to stop me doing things and gone around it because I believe and trust in him more than I do that man. And if God has a purpose and a plan for me and I trust God as I say I do, then I have nothing to fear from a white man stopping me, because if God says, "I'm going to put you here," and God going to tell me, whose report you going to believe? Are you going to believe the white man's report, or are you going to believe what I said? And in fact, he don't even say white man. He said, "Are you going to believe his report, or are you going to believe mine? What did I say in the Bible?" Okay, you said this and this and this. If you be patient, just wait, I'll do it. And guess what? It's come to pass. Even though that man who stood in front of me, that white man, did not want me to have it, did everything he could to do it, and I've gotten it. So here's my point. I'm going to say this, and I was going to say to save this for when I wrote my article, but the one thing I know is this. As a born-again, God-fearing Christian, if you really committed to Jesus Christ the Lord, you have no business saying and tripping out on the stuff that happened from the Martin case, because God is a God of justice. What I'm saying is, what bothers me is that the same people who say Jesus is my Lord, he's my Savior, he's my source, he's my all. I'm talking about people who are born again Christians who say the Bible is my final authority. I'm going to do this. I trust God. God's going to take care of me. He's going to do everything for me. Are the same people who are running out crying and hollering and screaming about there's inequality and the white man going to hold me down from this and hold me down. And I'm sitting there looking like,
well,
ain't you the same person that was on TV saying that you trusted God to overcome and do what you got to do? Like, what part did you not understand? And I know people don't understand that unless you know what I know. But what I'm saying is, ain't that the same? Ain't you the same guy or the same woman that was just talking on Christian television? Or weren't you the same person who sings about Jesus making a way out of no way? Ain't you the same person who's talking about Jesus getting you and overcoming whatever, whatever? I mean, where do you get this from? And then you come out and holler and scream about, you know, this crazy stuff. And that's the opposite of what you're supposed to believe. Ain't that the opposite of it?
We had a conversation, not last week, but the week before. And one of the things I said on that was that only ones that know what took place that night was God. At Trayvon
what?
Martin.
You did
three
say
people,
that. You did say that. You did
Zimmerman,
say that.
Zimmerman, Trayvon, and God.
Right.
So and
so that's
and
why
depend-
I said why well, that's why I didn't get mad about the verdict, because I'm gonna be honest with you, from what I saw and from what I saw on there and what I looked like, I thought Zimmerman had to, there was no evidence on there that he killed him, strictly just murdered him, like hit his, like shot him down in cold blood and did it. Listen to what I'm saying. I'm just okay,
right.
This is just me. I didn't think there was enough there to put the man on manslaughter for second degree was a stretch. That was just totally ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted him that bad. So I'm saying that was ridiculous. But be that as it may, at the end of the day, no matter what happened, if Zimmerman did it, if he went to jail or he didn't, my thing is, at the end of your life, dude, you got to go before God. And, dude,
exactly.
That's the dude. You
and
don't. So for me, I'm not going to trip about the result. I don't care less.
Right,
I'm not
going
to flip out and act a fool and get on TV and be irresponsible. And how can two ministers perpetrate the stuff that they're perpetrating on TV, and you're supposed to be ministers. Reverend
well,
Jackson,
let me put it this way.
Reverend
let me put it.
Come on,
let
man.
Me put it this way. Let me put it this way, Mac. And I tell you the truth. I was mad at the verdict, but I say, you know what? He had his day in court, just like OJ. They found him innocent, just like OJ. Regardless
so
of what your regardless of what my opinion was. What I think he had his day in court, and the final judge is when they pass from this life to the next life,
absolutely.
And that man will be the final judge. So you know,
exactly,
and
that's what I wish.
It is
but
what
that's
it is.
What
so.
I, but Jerry, that's what I wish. But Jerry, that's what I wish we would do as a people, instead of going around and making this big old stink about this because we don't like the verdict. Because like I told him, like I said when they first did it, I was like, O.J. Simpson did this. Y'all was good with it. Y'all was cheering and jumping around and doing
it. Yeah,
don't and act like you didn't think that he did that. But
yeah,
because,
I can't
by
be,
the way, we jumped in. And I'm saying, how can you sit and be, and now
be
when it goes, yeah, so now when it goes against you, now y'all want to act. Now y'all want to get Eric Holder involved and go investigate the FBI and investigate. I'm like, come on, man, stop playing with me.
You can't have it both ways. And I'm telling you, you know, and that's exactly what I say. You know what? OJ got off.
I respect you for that, because you're the only guy that I know. You're the only person that I know personally that's ever said that. That's literally said. You know what? That's seen it that way. Because I'm like, but that's how it's supposed to be. Like, if you keep telling me, that's why I laugh when the people say the system is unjust. I'm like, dude, everybody watched it. It wasn't like it was in behind closed doors. Everybody saw the same thing. The system worked. The man got heard. The man had a lawyer. The man got questioned. The witnesses. Come on, man.
I mean, like I said, I may not agree. Just like a lot of people didn't agree
with nobody
OJ verdict. Hey, it is what it is. He got his day in court, and like I said, the final judge is going to be the man upstairs.
Exactly.
And there's a lot. And there's a lot of things that are going on. Gay marriage, abortion, things like that. Judging people, and I'm not. Let he who has the cast the first stone. I forget the name.
He who is without sin cast the first stone. That's what
exactly,
Jesus said.
Exactly.
They were
going to
kill
the
woman because she was sleeping with other men.
Yeah. So,
and he said,
so what
he
I'm
was
saying
out,
is,
he,
you know.
And he said he was without sin, without
sin.
Right. Cast the first stone.
Exactly. Exactly. So
but,
you know.
But let me say this.
I'm not the type of person to judge him. So.
Yeah, but let me say this.
Yeah.
There's a difference, and I think this needs to be said, and I've heard this a lot, and it kind of bothers me, is that people think that if you state the truth about somebody, or you state things about people based on what you said, based off what you saw or you heard, and you see it as fact, or if you say something that's obvious, you know, people sit and say, you know, you shouldn't judge. Judging is not, let me say this to you, God talks about speaking the truth. Judging is when you want to mete out a punishment for something that you had, you weren't wrong, you had nothing to deal with. That's judging. The reason why Jesus said what he said to the woman was because they were going to throw rocks at her. They were going to stone her because she had been found to be sleeping with other people, with another man, I guess, and she wasn't married. And then what Jesus basically said is, you should. What Jesus was trying to say is, man, you need to forgive. You don't need to be, it ain't your job to, like, punish her and kill her. Because
exactly.
of what she
I
did. That was the law. So
mm-hmm.
all I'm saying to you is I'm sick and tired of us, and I'm just talking about us, saying, you know, you shouldn't be judging people, or, you know, only God can judge me. Yeah, God can judge you because he's picking out a punishment. But if I say that you shouldn't be smoking weed because it's a bad thing, that's not judging. That's telling you the truth. If I tell you shouldn't steal, that's the truth. But people are getting confused and thinking that it's judging. And that,
no,
and
that's
that really
judging.
No, not you, but I'm just saying,
yeah.
I've heard a lot of it on Facebook, on Twitter. I've talked to people and said things, and they're like, you know, why are you judging me? I ain't judging you. I'm telling you the truth. It, God never said lie to anybody about what's true. If it's the truth, I'm supposed to tell you. I'm supposed to tell it to you in love. I'm supposed to tell it to you because I care. Not to be mean, my motive, but if I tell you something, it's not to judge. But the problem is, we such an offended society that we don't want to hear that. And we get offended and say, I take offense to that. Or we say, you're judging me. You shouldn't be judging. That's not judging. That's called being honest. It's called telling the truth, but we're blurring the lines. And I hope people hear this. We're blurring the lines between truth and blurring the lines between, you know, truth and honesty versus judging and condemning. God's not
mm-hmm.
a person who believes in condemning somebody. I don't condemn you. That's why God doesn't like the word G-O-D-D-A-M-N, because people don't realize what they're saying. You shouldn't damn anybody. You know, you don't damn anybody. But what I'm saying is we just need to start realizing that people are telling us things. I'm just saying, like, African-Americans, and I'm only speaking because those are the people that I have an experience with, we need to move beyond not wanting to be told anything. We don't. If it's bad, we don't want to hear. If it's about us, we don't want to hear. We don't want to get better because the devil always tricks us into being offended about who's saying it or what they're saying instead of us listening and saying, you know what, let's be honest with myself. Am I really that way or am I really not that way? And when you
mm-hmm.
look at yourself honestly,
mm-hmm.
if you're that way, guess what? You know what? I'm glad they told me because you know what? I need to do better. And then we want to do that. But the problem is we get tricked into who's saying it. And then we get stuck on one word or one thing they said or how they said it.
I have to agree with you. The guy I work with showed me I had a bad habit. Rather than take offense to it, I realized the habit I had. I think consciously of not doing it, and it may be something trivial, but it's just a small example of taking, I would say criticism, but taking someone
mm-hmm.
that observes something that you're doing and trying to make you aware of it to. In essence, make you a better person for once, and that's fine.
But we as African Americans have a long way to go. Is because
mm-hmm.
we're too busy looking at the messenger. We're too busy.
And the guy happens to be white.
At
and the guy I'm talking about is white. It's not a black.
Right,
a white
right.
guy.
Right, and that's what I'm saying.
But
we have to learn is that God sends a lot of people into our lives. God
mm-hmm.
puts a lot of people up to try to help us along the way to help us get better because he sees down the road where this habit or what we're talking about may destroy us. And he has a purpose and a plan for us. But the problem is the devil tricks us into, man, he said that to you. He think he better than you. Well, you know what?
No, that cracker thing.
No, you don't
mm-hmm.
see it that way, but I'm telling
mm-hmm.
you how it works because I used to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
When people would tell me things that were legitimate things, I would get offended because I could never hear what they were saying because they were white. I could never
right.
hear what they're saying because
mm-hmm.
I got hooked on the word, you shouldn't. Who is he to tell me I shouldn't? What
mm-hmm.
you mean I shouldn't? You see
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying? And you'd be tricked. And you never get it. And then It's like, oh, and then you think it's just because he's white, but then when the black person comes along and say, man, who this nigga is thinking he's telling me, blah, blah, you know what I'm just saying? You'd be like, who is he to tell me, blah, 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 man, he's just jealous. He did, it. We got to stop doing that. We are very offended and very,
I would say very all of us, but I understand what you're saying.
Misinterpreted people. We misinterpret things all the time.
But that's a blanket statement, Mac. That's a blanket statement you're saying. We.
But I say that, no, because here's the thing. When I say something or post something, if the shoe fit, wear it. If it don't fit, don't worry about it. Somebody can say on here, you know what? Man, black people need to stop doing da-da-da-da-da. Guess what? I'm a black people. If that don't pertain to me, I don't get offended. The people who's doing it, that's what the message is for. My mother always told me, if the shoe fit, wear it. If it don't fit, keep going. I can't get hooked. See, that's how you get tricked when I say, oh, man, he told me all black. It ain't all black people. I ain't getting caught on that. Man, is that statement true about me? No, it's not. All right, then it must be true for somebody else. But I can tell you this, but there's some lot of things when that's shown, it don't go to me, but I can tell you two or three people it do pertain to that I know. So I know it's on there for a reason. So I can't get offended about a blank. I'm not gonna get hooked up into calling that a blanket statement. What I'm gonna do is move beyond that. And say, you know what? It ain't gonna fit me. So obviously, but I know people who need to hear that. So guess what? You know what? Cool. Good message. Should be heard. Hope they do hear. And that's my point. As we get ready to end the show, is I just want to make the point that we as African Americans need to move beyond white people, black people, Chinese people, other people telling us things about ourselves sometimes to help us get better and stop getting caught up in who's the messenger and how they said it, and then in trying to put words in between the lines and just say, is this a problem? Is this what we need to deal with? Is this something that's true? How do we make this better? And we need to look at that and take a serious look at it and say, you know what? He's got a point. I don't like the fact that he said, to be honest with you, I'm more mad. I'm going to tell you this. This is the last thing I'm going to say. I'm more mad that Bill O'Reilly said it and not the black leaders who said it. I'm mad that the black leaders don't run no campaigns. All that money they spend to get Barack Obama reelected and to push money behind him, I don't see them pushing out stuff about condoms. I don't see them pushing stuff about fathers, go be a father to your son or to your daughter and have a campaign like that. I don't see that. But these are the same people who sit when – but here's my point. You can't sit and come when the story is sensational. But when there's no more sensational stories, we don't see you, we don't hear from you, we don't do anything, but then you want to call yourself leaders. But then you want to call yourself, helping out the black, the national, whatever, color people. You want to help us. Sharpton wants to help us. Jackson wants to help us. But I don't see you until it's something big on TV. Then I see your big bobblehead asses on here, and now you want to come and tell me what you need. Now you fighting for us. But you don't fight for us every day. I don't see Sharpton and Jackson in Chicago every weekend. I don't see that. I don't see the NAACP running nothing about fathers. Come on, man. We know, Jerry. Me and you know,
well,
Jerry.
There are a lot of deadbeat dads out here. You got to believe now, and I got to take exception. I got to believe that they've been running campaigns. Maybe you're not aware of them, but they got to be running campaigns in certain targeted areas. That information disseminated out, they've got to be doing certain programs and certain campaigns to try to offset some of the things that have been going on.
I've never seen one targeted toward us on there where it says, fathers, pay your support and get visitation and go see your child. Nobody presents he's right. Nobody presents statistics. Let me tell you something. I would be more satisfied if the NAACP or the National Black Caucus or some of these other groups took the money they put behind Obama and put together a campaign that shows the statistics of what's going on with our black youth. And because their parents are not, and because the fathers are not in the home, and then ends and says, fathers, you need to be a father to your child. You need to go. If you're not going to be in the home, at least spend time with your son. I don't know how to put it together, but encourage them to go back home and go, not go marry the girl, but go take care of your kids. Go look after them. Go to school and visit. We can put together creative things like that. And that's what Bill was saying, is that it's not. Nobody's doing it. Nobody's saying that. But I'm just saying, we need to hold Sharpton and all these people accountable, because they're not, other than when it's sensational, we don't see them, Jerry. Jerry, we don't see these people. We see Sharpton only because he's on MSNBC and got his own show. We don't see Jackson every day. I don't see Jackson every weekend down in Chicago or in Alabama or down in Texas where somebody gets shot, a black guy gets shot. I don't see black on black us down there on black on black saying, hey, man, we need to stop shooting each other, man. This is ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? I don't hear them calling out and saying, you know what, Eric Holder, you need to go down there and take the Justice Department and find out why black people are killing each other down in Chicago or why they're killing each other over here and why don't we do something about it? Why can't we go do this and this and that? What I'm saying to you, Jerry, is that we as black Americans need to hold these people accountable because they only come up every 4 years when there's an election and support their candidates. They put all their money behind what they want, but they're not reaching out to the people that they need to be reaching out on a national level, and that's to our black youth. They don't. I don't know when the last time I remember the ones that used to, I tell you what, you know what the best one was? You know what the best black ad campaign was? Can you remember what it was?
No.
Support black colleges. A mind is a terrible thing to waste.
Yeah, support a traditional black college, yes.
You remember
yep.
that? That used to be.
Yeah.
I remember that when I was a kid
yep.
because that's all you
yep.
heard on TV. We don't
yep.
put that kind of stuff on no more, Jerry. We
Mine's
don't.
A terrible thing to waste.
How many?
Right.
Think about it. How many kids remember that ad? You remember it? If I said
oh,
to you,
absolutely.
"Mind is a terrible thing to waste," we
yep.
all our kids who come up hearing that commercial, we all remember a mind is a terrible thing to waste. If we don't remember nothing else about that commercial, we remember a mind is a terrible
Mine's
thing
a
to
terrible
waste.
Thing to waste. Absolutely.
And think about this. I wonder if you could find a statistic on how many of those kids that might have changed their life where they said, you know what, I do need to go to college. You know what, I do want to go to college. Maybe I didn't, but maybe I get up off the couch and decide I want to go to college because I heard that commercial. That's what I'm trying to say. When do we hold, what I'm saying is until we as black African Americans start writing these people, pushing these people and saying, look, y'all need to put out an ad campaign to try. I'm not saying it's going to work. I'm not going to say it's not going to end illiteracy. The mind is a terrible thing to waste. I'm pretty sure it didn't make everybody go to college. But if it saved one person, was it worth it? If it changed one life, was it worth it? If it keeps one, if you run a campaign about single black women having kids out of wedlock, if one decided not to because she saw it, would it be worth it? Would it be worth it to see a young black man see an Army commercial made to him and says, you know what, if you ain't got nothing to do, come on over here and serve your country. And, you know, we give you three hot meals and a cotton shirt, some discipline. I mean, there's things we can do to try. That's my point, and we're not trying.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing it, but we want to hustle the race hustle when something's national, but we don't never hear a peep from you in between there. We never hear from you, and that's part of what Bill O'Reilly was saying is that they're not doing their part, and all I'm saying is I believe the same thing. We got to do it. I don't want to hear from Bill O'Reilly. If you don't, here's my thing. If we don't want to hear from Bill O'Reilly, then we need to get our leaders up and say, hey, man, you got to get up off your ass.
Bill O'Reilly.
You know what I'm saying?
It doesn't make a difference. Bill O'Reilly is going to come on
son.
Anything, man. Anything.
I understand that. But Jerry, would you be offended? Let me ask you this, Jerry. Would you be offended? Wouldn't you be offended if your son went to somebody else and got advice from them on advice that he should have came to you about and heard about it? And then it made
sure.
you look like maybe you was that. Okay, well, that's what I'm saying. We need to hold our leaders accountable so that they say these things, so that they get up and do the things. But if we don't never say nothing until they jump in front of the cameras and it's a sensational case and now we all want to wear hoodies and now we all want to hear Skittles and Yoo-Hoo or whatever, but then when everybody gets killed on the weekends, I don't see nobody posting about that. I don't hear our leaders leading us on that and saying, you know what, we need to stop this black-on-black crime. And not having no summit, we have a whole bunch of famous people on the stage and talk about it for 3 hours, and then y'all break up and nothing happens. I'm talking about put on a national campaign. Have some events in the area where you get some free food and have counselors there to talk to kids, talk to women about how to help them, and they struggling with a single, with two
you know,
or three kids
I've,
and doing
I've
that.
Had a, I've had a program on, it had to be over a year ago at least,
mm-hmm.
And I had pushed out some statistics
mm-hmm.
about single moms,
mm-hmm.
and the statistics were staggering to me. So
mm-hmm.
I understand what Mr. Riley was saying. I do understand what he was saying. I'm not disputing some of the things we were saying. I just took a little umbrage on that that one thing that he said, because the fact is it more or less put a target, and I felt it put a target on one gender in one race, which is
I don't have a problem with that. I don't have no problem with that, Jerry. If you took it that way, that's fine. But here's my point. But here's my message to the audience. If anybody took offense to what Bill O'Reilly said, get up off your ass and call up your leaders, your so-called leaders, the NAACP, who can have an award show and give out a whole bunch of awards and plaques. Okay, why don't you take some of that money and funnel it into the communities and why don't you go down there and have a gang summit or something like that and sit down and talk to these guys and find out what's going on. You know, why don't you go open a job center and go down and teach kids how to use a computer and how to do, they know everything else, Google and Twitter and Facebook and all this other stuff. My thing is, when are these people going to stop having TV shows and just giving lip service when it serves them right? They so far up in the political realm, they're not thinking about the people downstairs, and I don't see nobody rolling up their sleeves and doing hard work. My thing is, if you don't want Bill O'Reilly to do it and you're offended, okay, fine. I can respect that. Then get up off your butt and write a letter and go talk to these people and put pressure on them to start using that money that they're using for elections and everything else to put on a thing about that, because here's the thing. We're all guilty when we don't say nothing. When we sit back, I mean, no disrespect to Trayvon, no disrespect to his parents, but, man, that's one dude. How many other Trayvon Martins have died? And I'm not talking about by the hands of a white guy. I'm talking about by the hands of a brother. That's wrong. That's wrong, and we're not hollering about that. We only hollering when it's the other race who does it to us. And I gotta say, we gotta stop both. But we're not doing nothing. We just post and we jump in. And let's see. I bet you 6 months from now, this will all be a memory. All of this will be a memory. We'll talk about it, like we do, Medgar Evers or. All these other people. We'll talk about Trayvon Martin like that, but won't be no more posting and stuff like that. And then all this gonna fade away. And I can tell you now, Holder and them not gonna go investigate this thing no more. They're not gonna do it. They're gonna keep talking about we gonna investigate it till this dude's out, till Obama's out of office. They're not gonna do nothing. They're not gonna do nothing because they know they don't have a case to go do it. Or if they do it, they'll do it to satisfy them, but they ain't gonna really look for it because they already know. But the fact of the matter is, we need to step up and start holding these people. I'm sick of seeing Sharpton and Jackson every time it's a big event and it's got something to do with black and white. But when it's black on black, I don't see you. You a ghost. I don't see you. And I'm sick of it. It's been all my life. All my life, these two clowns appear only when it serves them. It serves them. And I'm sick of it. And it's an insult. That's all I'm saying. We need to get on TV and try to help our youth. Don't tell me about it. Do something about it. And if it don't work, guess what, Jerry? At least I can say, well, the NAACP is doing something. At least Sharpton and Jackson are doing something. They're having a cookout in the summit. They're trying to do this. They're trying to have seminars. They're trying to do. You understand the millions and billions of dollars they spent on the campaign, the last two campaigns for Obama? You know where that money could have went, what kind of campaigns you could have ran, what kind of things you could have come up with? Come on, man. That's my point. But, you know, that's where I am. But like I said, man, you bring out the best in me, man. I appreciate it. You know, and I just want to say, because you really keep my mind sharp on what I know what I'm doing. But at the same time, you're the perfect devil's advocate because you do make good points, and I see that. But at the same time, you always help me to illustrate my point, which is, you know, one thing I will say about you, though, Jerry, is this, that I may disagree with you, but one thing I can say, when you're wrong, you will admit to certain things, or if you're wrong about a certain thing, or if you see certain a certain way, you'll say, I see your point, whatever. I like that. Mm-hmm. I wish more of us were like that instead of being so prideful and hung up on wanting to be right all the time that we never be wrong. Or we can never see somebody else's point. And that's what I always appreciate about you. I even appreciate it about Vic in a strange way. But,
That's funny.
Yeah, I'm gonna get it for that one, I'm pretty sure. But I just want to say thanks, Jerry, for being here. It's another interesting discussion. And remember, you said I don't want to talk about it, and it's a good thing to talk about.
Yeah,
it because,
see that? See that?
but I know how to get you into it because I know it, that's how you feel. But I think what it is, it's like my wife when she used to tell me, you know, she wanted to go travel and go somewhere, and I'd be like, man, I don't want to go there, and then I go there and I'd be like, damn, I'm glad I did that, you know.
So
it's one of those things where I just wanted to hear your opinion because I knew you were gonna come full force if I could get you in, but I also knew I would learn something, and I knew the audience would learn something, and I knew you would you're a yin to my yang, but at the same time, like I've always said, liberals and Democrats and Republicans want the same thing. The only difference is the way to go about it.
Exactly.
If you really think
you're
about
right.
it, that's the only difference.
It's just
the way to go about it. Nobody wants to see kids hungry. Democrat,
no,
Republican,
no.
Independent, nobody does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody will do anything to help anybody. I honestly believe that. There's just a difference in Democrats believe in giving everybody food stamps and saying that nobody's abusing the system, and the Republicans say there's a whole bunch of y'all out
here
blowing the system. And y'all tell you,
stop, stop, stop.
Anyway, on that note, man, we are going to end the show. Jerry,
okay.
Thanks for being here. I really appreciate
here,
you, my little sidekick.
Right.
Please check out my website, macwilliams.me. That's macwilliams.me. I will post different articles and different things. Please subscribe if you want to subscribe to the site. And I have a couple articles on there already. Jerry's probably heated about one of them, which is the Bill O'Reilly one. And then I also posted on there what happened to Detroit and why. I posted a video on there. I'm pretty sure since it's by a conservative, and it is true, the stats back it up, it will be scrutinized. But I encourage you guys to go over and look at it, and I will be writing some other articles as we come. And it won't all be politics. It'll be sports and other things, whatever I feel to be talking about. But please, subscribe to macwilliams.me, and with that, we are out of here. Please check out trinitywebsolutions.org for all your online needs also. And until next week, Jerry, I will see you, my man.
Take care.
All right, later.